The following is a Reels Channel and Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and PodcastOne.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit Spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The truth is, most of us are brushing our teeth wrong, not for long enough, and forget to change our brush on time. That's because most brands focus on selling flashy gimmicks rather than better brushing. But not Quip. Quip is an electric toothbrush that's a fraction of the cost of bulkier brushes, while still packing just the right amount of vibrations to help clean your teeth. Quip's built-in timer helps you clean for the dentist recommended 2 minutes with guiding pulses that remind you when to switch sides. Next, Quip's subscription plans are for your health, not just convenience. They deliver new brush heads on the dentist recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5, including free shipping worldwide. Quip also comes with a mount that suctions right to your mirror and unsticks to use as a cover for hygienic travel wherever you take your teeth. And finally, everyone loves Quip. They are on Oprah's O-List, named one of Time's Best Inventions, and is the first subscription electric toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association. Plus, they're backed by a network of over 20,000 dentists and hygienists, and hundreds of thousands of happy brushers use Quip every day. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/MMMF right now, you'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/MMMF. getquip.com/MMMF.
This program contains graphic violence and sexual situations. Viewer discretion is advised.
A shocking double murder stuns a close-knit community.
It was a high society murder.
It never dawned on me that there would be anything as horrific as shooting both of them.
The victims, handsome, high-powered malpractice attorney Dan Broderick, and his beautiful new bride, Linda. There is never any question as to who committed the murders.
I lost it!
Broderick's ex-wife is the classic definition of a woman scorned.
Yes, she killed her ex-husband and his new wife. But did they drive her to do it?
A media firestorm erupts around this volatile, vengeful personality that the entire nation soon comes to know as Angry Betty.
Some young slut is more important than all of that!
She had endured a messy divorce and custody battle and experienced the humiliation of a publicly flaunted extramarital affair.
She's falling apart at that point, and people are seeing that.
Was this horrific crime the result of a wife losing control after her husband leaves her for a younger, prettier woman? Or is she the victim of an ex-husband hell-bent on inflicting torment and destroying her life?
She still thinks today that they deserve to die.
It's a question more than one jury would ultimately have to decide.
I really think you're overreacting right now, okay?
Oh, really?
Meet Betty Broderick.
It just made me so mad!
Just a high society soccer mom with anger issues.
You're making me mad. I'll kill you.
Until murder made her famous. When a 41-year-old mother guns down the father of her children and his new wife, an enraptured media dubs her Angry Betty.
Reporter Steve Fiorina.
It's human drama, and it grabbed people. Several books have been written. Hollywood did 2 movies.
Senior crime reporter Steve Helling.
Betty Broderick's first defense attorney actually had to hire a PR firm because he couldn't handle all the calls from the media.
The dramatic trials of Betty Broderick grabbed the public's interest and play out live on Court TV for all of America to see.
Just
I'm old Damo. The gun went off and it was that fast.
As details unfold, Angry Betty's story sparks an uprising of women who rally to support a mother of four, left by her cheating ex-husband for a younger model.
You have the faithful housewife, and then you have the handsome, rich lawyer, and his new younger model is what Betty liked to call her. And a lot of women across the country wondered, hey, could this happen to me? Could my marriage fall apart like this?
Their story begins happily in 1965.
Dan Broderick was finishing up his undergrad at Notre Dame, and Betty was a freshman in college in New York, but she traveled to Indiana with some friends to see the USC-Notre Dame game.
Can I borrow this real quick?
Sure, it's my napkin. D&T Broderick III. What does MDA stand for?
Medical doctor, almost.
Almost.
Dan was a charming guy, and he said that the A stood for almost, as in almost a doctor, and Betty ate it up.
You know, I'm going to medical school, Cornell, next fall. Could be dangerously close to you.
Not as close as you'd like to be.
You mean do anything to change that?
According to Betty, on the night that they met, she heard that he had told a friend that she was the woman that he was going to marry. So I guess you could say this was love at first sight.
After Dan graduates from Notre Dame, he heads east to Betty's territory, New York City, to attend Cornell Medical School. Both from large, affluent Catholic families, Betty and Dan appear to have much in common.
Defense attorney Jack Early.
She grew up expecting to marry this knight in shining armor, and I think that that's what she thought she was getting with Dan Broderick.
Dan and Betty were very similar in the fact that they both had big dreams for their future, and status was very important to them both.
In 1969, Betty and Dan marry in a lavish affair. But things are quite different when Betty finds herself living in Dan's dorm and the reality of their financial situation sets in.
Okay.
It's temporary.
It has to be.
This is the almost part.
Oh, okay. This, Dan, is a long way from almost. Dan, stop.
These weren't the accommodations that Betty was used to, but she was willing to weather that storm, partially because she loved her husband. But she probably also thought this was a temporary sacrifice for greater good in the future.
Betts, as Dan calls her, begins working as a teacher to support the couple financially and allow Dan to focus all his time on getting his degree. Then, in the spring of 1969, Betty finds out she is going to be a mother.
This is incredible.
But I mean, look at this place. I mean, look at her life.
Betty, this is all temporary.
They were young and struggling, and they were having their problems. But Betty said that their pregnancy actually kept them together during this difficult time.
We're going to have a baby.
We're going to have a baby. I promise I won't ever let you down. Okay?
Okay.
About a year after they were married, baby Kimberly was born in 1970. But they were so broke that Kimberly spent the first months of her life sleeping in a dresser drawer.
With Dan still in school and a newborn at home, Betty's stress level begins to reach its tipping point.
Dan, this isn't going to work.
What? It's all temporary.
I mean, we can't keep living like this. And, hey, I refuse to raise my daughter in a dresser.
Betts, I know I'm trying.
Well, try harder, okay? I feel like I'm the only one working for this family.
Here you have a couple of newlyweds who are living in a dorm room with a baby. You'd think it couldn't get any more stressful, but it did.
Life soon takes another twist when Dan makes an announcement.
I think I want to go to law school.
What?
Yeah, just hear me out. I think I could provide a better living for us as a medical malpractice lawyer. Besides, doctors are getting sued all the time, and I just think that's our best option.
I agree.
You do?
Yeah.
Really?
Good thinking, Dr. Broderick.
Betty backs Dan completely. He moves the family to Boston and focuses on his seemingly never-ending education.
They realized, okay, this is a great chance for him. The plan was work for a big firm and then go out on your own. It was always going to be the Dan Broderick show.
But Dan's mounting student loans forced Betty to continue working various jobs to keep the family afloat financially.
Betty is still the breadwinner. And even though she's pregnant with her second child, she's having to take on additional jobs like babysitting for other families just to make ends meet.
And often through that period of time, it was expected that she would be doing the child care plus the work that she was doing. But she always looked at that as a sacrifice that was well worth it given the projection of what they were going to do.
In 1973, the family has a reason to celebrate when Dan graduates with a Harvard Law degree.
Excited to start a brand new chapter, the Broderick family goes to San Diego, where Dan's gotten a job at a prestigious law firm.
Dan quickly makes his mark as San Diego's next standout medical malpractice attorney.
He may look like a kid, but he's got double degrees from Harvard and Cornell. Watch out.
That's true.
He's coming for you.
Dan's friend, Mike Neal.
For a plaintiff's lawyer, he was well-liked by everybody, and that included the defense side.
But Dan increasingly neglects his family by staying at work later and later to drink and socialize with peers, leaving Betty alone, caring for two kids in their modest first home in San Diego.
Hey, baby girl, come here. Oh, I missed you.
Doing okay?
You missed dinner again.
Hey, how about you getting ready for bed? I'm going to read you a bedtime story.
You know, if you're never going to be here, Dan, you need to be making more money for us, okay? I need someone that the kids can count on.
Betty was supportive, but she was no doormat. Dan was gone a lot, and Betty had her limits.
He would be out where he would be drinking. There was disinterest in the kids and what was going on. You know, he's excited about his new life, but he's also anchored by a family.
In the mid-70s, the couple managed to buy an upscale home in the wealthy town of Baja La Jolla. Betty dyes her hair platinum blonde and fits comfortably into the role of California soccer mom.
The La Jolla house was the ultimate status symbol.
But behind closed doors, simmering marital problems continued to bubble to the surface.
Betty's friend, Ann Dick.
After very demanding trials that he would be in, he'd want to go out and celebrate. And, you know, he didn't come home for dinner. And it's kind of hard to fix dinner for four kids and a husband and then not have him come home.
There was problems. Besides the trappings of success, she wanted a warm relationship between them.
Seriously?
Even with counseling, the couple's arguing increases and becomes more volatile.
I supported you!
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah.
I made you, Dan!
You support you now.
I made no one support
me! Did you buy this house?
I do everything for you! You don't appreciate
their fights are so intense that not even turning up the volume on the radio can mask the noise.
Oh, I sound this way! Is that it?
Even though they tried to put up a good front, the cracks in Dan and Betty's marriage were starting to show.
It won't be long before those cracks in the marriage turn into craters filled with infidelity and betrayal that eventually escalate to the point of murder. The marriage of Dan and Betty Broderick is not the storybook life they once imagined. Dan spends his time working and networking with colleagues, while Betty spends hers shuttling the kids to and from activities.
Betty embraced her role as a soccer mom so much that her license plate read, "Load 'em up."
She was the consummate mother. She really was good with her kids, and she loved being a mom.
On the outside, Betty and Dan enjoy an affluent lifestyle that they've worked hard to achieve. But behind closed doors, Betty's unhappy that Dan hasn't become the family man she'd always hoped for.
Dan became consumed with his work, and it is consuming.
Betty was really conflicted between Dan's ambitions and goals to be a successful lawyer and at the same time being a complete family man, father, husband. Betty would plan vacation trips. She'd take him skiing in Colorado, and Dan backed out always at the last minute on things that she had planned for the family. And that was really hard for her to take because she wanted him to be as good a dad as she was as a mother.
Betty has supported Dan's education and career, but his unwillingness to make time for her and the children brings her to her breaking point.
Are you kidding me?
Wait!
Are you kidding me?
when you shatter something, it's not just the last hit. It's the 15 hits before that that weaken it up and weaken it up and weaken it up. And then it's that last hammer blow that finally makes it so that you fall apart. And it happened in a way that really destroyed her life.
It's the winter of 1982, and Dan Broderick meets a 21-year-old receptionist who will unknowingly find herself the target of Betty's wrath.
Yeah, Linda is pretty.
If by pretty you mean drop-dead gorgeous, then yeah, she's pretty.
That had to sting a little bit, because Linda was a younger version of Betty.
Former detective Terry DeGelder.
It was uncanny how much they looked alike. We discovered photographs of Betty Broderick when she was younger, and Linda could have been Betty's sister. They looked so much alike.
Linda was a pool receptionist, so she did admin work and answered phones for everybody in the firm.
So, how are you liking it?
It's been really wonderful.
Good. How would you feel about getting out of the reception pool and being my personal assistant?
I'd say, what can I do for you, sir?
At first, Betty was thrilled that Dan had hired somebody to help him out in the office. Maybe he'd have more time for everybody at home. But then, when Betty found out who he hired, she was furious.
And in the coming months, friends spot Dan with Linda all around town.
There were people in the community who would say that they had observed Linda and Dan walking across the street downtown holding hands. Well, when you're married and have four children, that's not exactly appropriate. It was very strongly rumored that there was an extramarital affair taking place.
Everyone has left for the day.
Really?
Mr. Broderick, do you need anything else from me?
Yeah, I could think of a couple things, actually.
Betty knows in her gut that something is wrong.
Betty, what are you doing?
It's your assistant, isn't it? You're sleeping with her?
Honey, there's nobody else, okay?
I mean, I wouldn't blame you, Dan. We've been miserable for years. She's pretty.
He still is not being honest with her, and he's telling her she's crazy.
Look at me, Betts. You're the only one. You're the mother of my children. I love you. Okay, so let's stop the crazy talk and let's just go to sleep, all right?
Without proof of an affair, Betty chalks up Dan's behavior to a midlife crisis.
On Dan's birthday, Betty decides to take him out for lunch.
Betty finds clues in the office that only fuel her suspicions.
Where is my husband, Dan Broderick?
Mr. Broderick is gone for the day.
Where did he go?
I'm not sure. But Linda, his assistant...
Betty was pissed.
Where have you been?
I've had drinks with the boys from the office for my birthday. What's going on?
Since lunch?
What?
Yeah, I came down to surprise you at the office, and your receptionist said that you were out to lunch with Linda. Is that who you were celebrating with tonight, Dan?
Drinks with the for my birthday, you know?
That's... You know what, Dan? I work myself to the bone. You know, raising our kids.
Right.
Keeping a house. Paying for you to become Mr. Dan Broderick.
Okay.
I mean...
Right, okay. Okay, I really think you're overreacting right now, okay?
Oh,
Betty,
really?
Betty, just a little bit.
You
okay,
know, am
Betty,
I?
Listen to me.
Am I really?
What are you doing?
You know what? I guess Linda deserves that attention, right? Not me. Not the woman
or
who's given the best years
right now.
Of her life to you.
Craziest thing you have ever done.
Some
Jump
young slut is more important than all of that. Just get out, Dan.
Get out?
That is my house. You know that? If you want to leave, great. Leave. After this, I could...
Oh, my God!
But Betty can't bring herself to leave Dan.
I don't think Betty really wanted a divorce. I think she wanted life to be different, and it did not include a divorce.
Things gradually cool down, and the Brodericks even decide to remodel their home. While it is being worked on, they rent a house where they spend Christmas together.
I have one for Mom.
Well, thank you, Dan.
Welcome.
Really, Dan? You get me the ring that I don't ask for? I sent you the ring that I wanted, and this is what you give me.
They were overreactions to the smallest thing.
But it's Christmas, it's a family holiday, and you make it about you.
To Betty, this is just another example of the widening gulf between her and Dan.
She could not accept that she was not in charge and controlling him and just went off into her own world. And that's where she's always remained.
Dan packs his bags and goes to the Coral Reef house, which is in the middle of being repaired.
He confided in me and told me that he and his wife were separated and he was seeing Linda.
Once again, the kids get caught in the crossfire. Betty begins dropping off the kids one by one on his doorstep.
Do I have to go? I don't think he's home.
Yes, I'm sorry, sweetie, but your dad has to watch you.
At one point in time, she brings the kids and dumps them off on Dan. Not because she wants to dump the kids. Those are her whole life. It's because she feels that Dan is going to understand the responsibility and how hard it is and what she does.
It turns out to be a critical mistake. Once again, Betty Brodrick has misread her man. He keeps the kids, and she doesn't get custody of them back.
Then, in the fall of 1985, after 16 years of marriage, Dan files for divorce.
I believe he stuck with her because of the children. I mean, ultimately, it just got to the point where his life was so miserable, he had to get out.
Dan makes it official in front of the who's who of San Diego.
Mrs. Betty Brodrick?
Yes.
Betty is served divorce papers in the most humiliating way possible for a socialite, while she's having lunch out with her socialite friends.
There's woman lawyers, the judge's wives, at a social function, and she is served with the divorce papers.
Betty is convinced that Dan deliberately serves her with divorce papers in public to humiliate her. This act not only kicks off one of the nastiest divorces in legal history, but also a savage crime that will shock the nation.
Murder Made Me Famous. We'll be back after a word from our sponsors.
If you're struggling to get a good night's sleep, try a Purple mattress. Purple is a leading comfort tech company that uses cutting-edge science to create the world's most comfortable sleep and sit products. Most mattresses use memory foam, an outdated technology developed way back in the 1960s. Memory foam traps body heat and provides inconsistent support, which is why you can wake up sweaty and uncomfortable. The Purple Smart Comfort Grid is scientifically engineered to adapt to any body type or sleeping position. It works by actively cradling your shoulders and hips while gently supporting your back for a unique zero-gravity-like feel. It also helps you sleep cool with a breathable, open grid design and temperature-neutral materials that don't absorb heat. The Purple has a very unique feel. It's soft where you want it and firm where you need it for balanced comfort and support, whether you sleep on your back, side, or stomach. And it comes in three different comfort levels, so you can choose exactly how firm or soft you want it to be. And it comes with a 100-night risk-free trial. If you're not fully satisfied, you can return your mattress for a full refund with free shipping and returns, backed by a 10-year warranty, and with free in-home setup and old mattress removal. And right now, our listeners will get a free sheet set and mattress cover with your mattress purchase. Just go to purple.com/famous. That's purple.com/FAMOUS. purple.com/famous.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Collider says BritBox has TV everyone should be watching. Stream acclaimed series with powerful performances from Jodie Whittaker, Tamara Lawrence, Bella Ramsey, and Matthew McFadyen. Discover new BritBox original series you won't find anywhere else. Like Three Little Birds, Agatha Christie's Murder is Easy, and a new chapter of BAFTA-winning drama, Time. Stream what the New York Times calls the best of British telly, only on BritBox. Start a free trial at BritBox.com.
One third of all murder cases in America remain open.
He had told me that if I opened my eyes, he would slit my throat.
Each one is called a cold case.
The DNA evidence taken from the victim was a match. The linen rapist was at it again.
Based on the hit A&E television program.
A phone call is placed, one that changes a family's life forever.
Cold Case Files, the podcast.
If you could see the fire in his eyes, he screamed at me. You want it? Get your tape recorder out.
Download new episodes every Tuesday on PodcastOne.com. The Podcast One app. Or Apple Podcasts.
This program contains graphic violence and sexual situations. Viewer discretion is advised.
After a tumultuous 16-year marriage, Dan Broderick publicly serves his wife with divorce papers, spawning one of the most bitter divorces San Diego has ever seen.
She had always heard from Dan when he talked about the system. He would regale on the things he would do to win cases, and a lawsuit was war. And if you could psychologically destroy the other side, you won the case. And that's how we viewed it. And that's how she always thought that was great. But then all of a sudden, she saw the guns turned on her.
Broderick versus Broderick plays out publicly in a barrage of paperwork and court dates.
He would send requests for subpoena, make her appear in court.
They would have a hearing scheduled, and Betty's lawyer lived in Los Angeles. So he would drive 3 hours down and only to find that the hearing had been canceled. So he would drive 3 hours back to Los Angeles, which was all billable time. And I think it really wore Betty down. I think she got to the point where she just couldn't cope with one more hurdle that he could put up in front of her.
She felt a victim of the legal system in San Diego, that everybody was Dan's buddy and they were ganging up on her.
Dan drags out the court proceedings, slowing Betty's access to her children and what she deems her fair share of his seven-figure income. In addition, he forces her to settle for a smaller monthly allowance.
Dan had always controlled all the books, and what's more, he was even controlling them now that they were separated.
You know, that was another way that he would manipulate her.
Meanwhile, Dan maintains full custody of their four children and buys a new home, while Betty is forced to live in a rental.
Betty shows up unannounced at Dan's house to see the kids. And on the kitchen counter, there's a cream pie, and she thinks that's Linda's touch.
And although no match for Dan legally, Betty knows how to play hardball. Incensed by Betty's actions, Linda pushes Dan to fight back by getting a restraining order.
Betty was livid when she found out about the restraining order. She refused to stay off the property, and things got even worse.
A restraining order? Really, Dan? I know you're in there! Open up, Dan! Really? Open up! Come on, Dan! You can't restrain me!
By 1986, Dan and Betty agree to sell their family home, but Betty won't agree to Dan's sale price.
Betty moves to a new place, so she and Dan argue over how they're going to sell the family home. Dan finally convinces a judge that Betty's being unreasonable, and that way he's able to sell the house out from under Betty without her consent.
Betty is furious about the sale.
Dad, what was that?
Stay here. What are you doing?
Get your hands! Don't touch me! Get your hands off me! Get your hands! Don't touch me!
Stop.
You think you can keep my kids from me?
Back up.
You can't keep me from my children! Get off me, Dad!
Right now!
Get off me!
What is wrong with you?
Get in!
What's wrong with you?
I want my children!
So she drove her Suburban through the front door. And it was obviously something that was, a desperate cry. It's to get someone's attention.
Betty is arrested for violating her restraining order, and Dan commits her to a mental facility for a 72-hour observation.
You won't stop me!
All right. All right.
Mommy's okay, sweetie! Mommy loves you!
All right.
This won't stop me, Dad!
She's falling apart at that point, and people are seeing that. She is gaining weight. She's becoming sloppier in her dress. Everyone can see it's taking a psychological toll.
Meanwhile, the four Broderick children are caught in this tangled web between these three people, Dan and Linda and Betty. Betty knows that Linda's part of her kids' lives at this point, but she just can't control herself.
Linda's voice is now on Dan's home answering machine, and this provokes Betty.
Not at the table. You know better. What's your question?
What's this? We can't come to the phone. You're not supposed to come to the phone at the house. You're supposed to come at the house and answer the phone at the office.
Sorry, Guinness.
Dan has taken on this role of being a controlling parent to his ex-wife. Every time that Betty swears, he takes money away from her $16,000 a month support check.
Oh, $100 for a potty mouth? $1,000 for taking my boys without asking you. I hope you rot in hell, you disgusting piece of filth.
I think they got to the point where they couldn't talk to each other. And this is when he instituted the fine system for every naughty word that she said. And I mean, that's pretty childlike, to fine your wife for using a four-letter word.
So sometimes at the end of a month, she was $5,000 in debt because the court allowed him to treat her like a little kid.
But Dan and Betty aren't the only ones behaving badly.
Betty believes that Linda has left her a package that includes weight loss products and wrinkle cream ads with a note that says, "Eat your heart out, bitch."
Betty's life is in turmoil, and Dan, the man she supported for years, is making it very clear that he is moving on.
So, I might do something really embarrassing right now. Won't you forgive me if I do?
No.
Yeah. Be right back.
What are you doing?
Ladies and gentlemen, I have the pleasure of being with the prettiest girl in the bar right now. And I think I found my soulmate. So I would like to take this opportunity to ask this lovely lady to marry me. Oh. Make me the happiest man in the world. And become my wife.
Yes. Of course, yes.
I remember the gossip column on the front page of the paper had Dan Broderick on one knee proposing to his legal assistant, Linda Colquina, at Dobson's, which is the premier downtown steakhouse bar. It is the place to be seen, and Dan took full advantage of that. Did they rub it in Betty's face? Probably. And she did not react well.
Months later, Betty and Dan finalized their divorce in early 1989 after an almost four-year battle. Betty goes through a stream of lawyers before finally representing herself, and she comes out the losing party.
Of all their property, and it was millions of dollars of property, Betty basically got nothing and Dan got all the rest.
The final blow of the divorce? Betty loses custody of her own children and only has visitation rights.
The papa bear took the cub away from the mother, and you don't come between a mother bear and their cubs.
Their marriage is officially over, just short of their 20th anniversary. A defeated Betty searches for some semblance of control, and in March, she finds it at a gun shop.
She bought the gun, for some protection, that she had felt that Linda had broken into the house.
kind of bullets do the most damage to a person?
I'll show you.
Betty's anger over the divorce escalates into her leaving death threats on Dan's answering machine.
That's going long enough to return my call. I left messages on the machine with the maid, with the secretary. I have very important things to ask you. You're making me mad. I'll kill you.
Friends fear for Dan and Linda's safety when the couple marries on April 22nd, 1989.
There was a lot of security and people were concerned because they'd heard her threats that she was going to kill him. And she did. I mean, verbally made a threat that she would kill him.
Meanwhile, Betty is focused on getting custody of her children back. But that day never comes.
November 5th, 1989. Betty Broderick is up before dawn. She's been decimated by the divorce, but now threatening custody papers sent by Dan's attorney push her to the tipping point. To Betty, this is yet another form of intimidation on the part of Dan.
She's expecting the children back. That's all she wants. They'd already settled everything. She had admitted defeat. And then she gets the letter that says, no, you're not getting the kids back now. We have problems.
The life Betty once knew as a prominent lawyer's wife and a proud mom of four has crumbled around her. Now, at the end of her rope, Betty Broderick makes her next move. November 1989. Betty Broderick, up well before dawn, is distraught over new legal papers and the ongoing custody dispute over her two youngest children, Danny and Rhett.
At the end, Betty was defeated. And all she wanted was the kids back. And she was promised that she would get them back, and that's what she was going to do. And then all of a sudden, she gets a letter in the mail. And the letter basically says the war is going to start again and you're not going to get those kids.
Armed with a gun, Betty enters Dan and Linda's house with her daughter's key.
Betty took the phone away from him and started hitting him on his hand. And then she ripped the phone out of the wall. We found out later from the medical examiner that he probably lived about 20 minutes.
Flees the scene and calls her daughter, Lee.
I don't think they're dead, but I lost it.
Who's
dead, Mom? Dan and Linda. They made me so mad. I don't know. I lost it in there. I need your help.
Mom, come home.
When word spreads about the shooting, concerned friends rush to Dan and Linda's home, where they discover the unimaginable. Later that day, Betty Broderick turns herself in. The double murder of 44-year-old Dan Broderick and his 28-year-old wife, Linda, at the hands of Dan's ex-wife, Betty, sends shockwaves through San Diego.
Of all the things that I could have imagined Betty doing, the worst thing I could think of was that she would steal the children and go away. It never dawned on me that there would be anything as horrific as shooting both of them.
Police find the murder weapon in Betty's purse. They execute a search warrant at her home where they discover an ominous manuscript she'd written about her marriage's demise.
We found a book. It was a transcript that Betty had written. The title of it was What's a Nice Girl to Do? And it was basically an outline of their life, all the troubles they had and the divorce and everything. The last line of that transcript was, "The only impact I'm going to have on this man is to kill him."
A judge denies bail as the media frenzy begins.
It was a high society murder. Betty Broderick had smeared chocolate cake all over the bed. She had taken his clothes, doused them with gasoline, and set them afire. She later drove her SUV into the front of his house. She was angry.
Betty actually had two trials. The first trial ended with a hung jury after two of the jurors wanted to go for a lesser charge. The second one, however, was broadcast live on court TV, and it became a media sensation.
The courtroom was packed every day. People would stand in line in order to get a seat inside. And at times, we had to stand in line ourselves in order to get our seats.
During both trials, the prosecution claims Betty is a cold-blooded killer who, motivated by hatred, money, and jealousy, planned to murder.
Pointed the gun at them, and she pulled the trigger 5 times.
However, the defense paints Betty as an emotionally battered woman who fires in the heat of passion after being driven to the brink by her ex-husband's betrayal and legal maneuverings, which include sole custody of their children.
And he smashed that family apart.
Betty takes the stand in her own defense.
She felt she was the wrong woman in all this, the victim of a conspiracy in the legal community in San Diego, that she had no way out.
On the witness stand, Betty talks about her efforts to save their doomed marriage.
I just tried to not be old, fat, ugly, boring, and stupid. I tried to become perfect for him so he'd have nothing to complain about at all.
But Betty says her efforts don't work, and Dan moves out. Only months later does he confess his affair.
Now I'm standing in this house that's empty. My kids are gone. I have no money. I have no control. I mean, it's a little late to be telling me the truth.
Then Betty talked about the last letter she received from Dan, which was all about the custody of the kids.
Seeing the boys was going to be put off and put off and put off, and I just stood there and I felt so sorry for my boys that they were missing everything.
Betty will claim she never went to Dan's house to kill.
She went in basically to threaten him, to try to put an end to the animosity.
I was going to ask him for the kids and to just leave me alone. And if he wouldn't agree at all, I was just going to kill myself.
But she went in with a loaded gun that she had bought months before. And she goes into the house with a key that she wasn't supposed to have, goes into their bedroom, and points the gun.
Betty claims she didn't purposely aim and doesn't remember actually firing.
I remember the noise of the gun. 5 times.
The prosecution says that Dan and Linda were shot helplessly in their sleep, but Betty has a different story.
They moved, and somebody screamed, "Call the police," and I said, "No!" And I just fired the gun, and this big noise went off.
Prosecutor Carrie Wells grills Betty during cross-examination.
"You shot!"
"It all happened so fast. I'm telling you, it wasn't a thought process."
Wells also paints a picture of the aftermath.
"What she did was to walk all the way around the bed, over to where Dan was lying, to where, as she later told someone, she could hear him gurgling in his own blood. She picked up the phone and ripped it out of the wall, literally tearing the cord in half."
Betty's daughter, Lee, recalls the phone call that she got right as Betty fled the scene.
"She told me that she shot my dad. She shot the son of a bitch. She said she shot the gun one time, but it fired 5 or 6 times. She didn't know what had happened because the drapes were drawn and it was completely dark."
Homicide investigators counter Betty's claims that it was dark and that she didn't directly aim at anything.
"Tracing the path of the bullets with the laser, it showed us that it was a deliberate, well-aimed shooting. Not somebody just firing a gun in a panic mode."
If the crime scene doesn't sway the jury, the prosecution hopes that a taped phone call between Betty and her son Danny will.
"I cared about my family bad enough to put up with him and Linda for 2 years.
Yeah, well, if you care about your family, something bad hurts, Mom."
Danny was pleading, "Mom, please don't do this." Now, whether Dan coached him, you don't know that. It's a very sympathetic reaction you'd have to a little boy that says, "Mom, please don't do that." It's pretty powerful.
I always thought with that tape, it was the very strongest evidence of how affected Betty was, that she was screaming, that she was cussing when her kids, that she couldn't even see how much she hurt them, because the kids were the things that she loved it the most.
"And we're never going to be able to come over there if you don't stop. And if you don't stop, it just shows me that all you care about is your money."
The defense argues the case was never about dollar signs.
"It wasn't about money. It was about the partnership they had, what was fair."
Yes, she killed her ex-husband and his new wife. But did they drive her to do it?
"Why can't they just leave me alone? Why can't they let me get control of my life and get my kids and just have a peaceful, normal life? They wanted to just drive me crazy."
Will the jury by Betty's victim defense?
The question is, what was that crime that she was guilty of?
October 1991. Angry Betty Broderick is on trial for the 1989 double murder of her ex-husband Dan and his new wife Linda. Betty's defense attorney argues the verdict should be voluntary manslaughter versus first-degree murder. His reasoning, that Betty was driven to kill by Dan's behavior. After supporting his education and career for years, Dan had left Betty for younger woman Linda and taken custody of the children. At trial, Betty maintains that Dan and Linda subjected her to psychological abuse and intimidation.
She painted herself as the wrong woman, and to an extent she was. But she also did a lot of things that came out in the trial that were just wrong. She left message after message, voicemails for the children, full of curse words, demeaning comments.
The prosecution plays a recording of Betty's son Danny begging her to stop using vulgarities.
You keep on saying the bad words, and we're never going to be able to come over there if you don't stop.
The prosecution attempts to show how Betty's anger toward Dan grows over time, even at the expense of the emotional state of her kids, and that the murders were no accident.
Betty never denied that she pulled the trigger, but she claimed that she never meant to kill them.
We always said that she was guilty of a crime. The question is, what was that crime that she was guilty of?
Betty claims she fired in a moment of panic.
She said on the witness stand, Linda said something, and it was just, and fired, and she indicated she didn't really remember anything after the shooting.
I mean, it just was an explosion. They moved, the gun went off, and it was that fast.
Homicide detectives differ with the defense's claim Betty had gone there to talk or to kill herself.
He abused me, and I went there to kill myself. That doesn't jive with the facts. The facts are, you learn how to shoot, you write a book saying that you're going to kill these people, and then you do it.
The prosecution will call on Betty's oldest daughter, Kim.
Then she said that one of us had to go. It was one or the other. You know, I had to do it.
After an almost two-month trial, jurors reach a verdict.
We, the jury, in the above entitled cause, find the defendant, Elizabeth Ann Broderick, guilty of the crime of murder.
The judge throws the book at her. She gets sentenced to two consecutive terms of 15 years to life, plus an additional 2 years for the use of a firearm.
Betty doesn't react when the judge gives her the maximum penalty for each murder. Today, more than two decades later, Betty Broderick sits behind bars in a California women's prison.
She still thinks today that she didn't do anything wrong, that they deserve to die, because she said they harmed her in such a way that they deserve to be murdered.
Really, the killing of Linda and Dan, in my mind, was the end result of her frustration that she couldn't control them anymore. And if she couldn't control them, then she was going to eliminate them. And that's what she did.
Angry Betty's double homicide continues to gain media attention, inspiring two TV movies within a year of her conviction.
There were two camps. There were pro-Betty camps and pro-Dan camps. There wasn't anything in between.
I got phone calls throughout all the trials, and I still get phone calls from women that are going through a lot of pain, going through divorce or a separation. They either want to have contact with Betty or they want to tell the story.
Oprah Winfrey interviews Betty in prison.
Do you see your children?
No.
Because they don't come to see you.
I'm going to mess up my makeup, Oprah. Okay. Bring up the kids.
Okay.
By 2010... Betty's now grown children are split on whether she should be set free.
At Betty's parole hearing, her son Dan still doesn't feel that she shows any remorse, even after serving 20 years.
She has never apologized until today for what she's done, and has never acknowledged the pain and suffering.
The parole board feels likewise, and they deny Betty's parole, citing her lack of remorse.
Your heart is still bitter. You're still angry. You're showing no significant progress in evolving.
But she has said she wished she hadn't done it, she would have done it differently again, and she knows it was wrong for that to happen.
Betty's friends support her release and assert that she's no threat to society.
I don't think Betty would ever hurt anyone again in her life, knowing what she now knows of 25 years in prison.
I think she should spend the rest of her life in prison. She's still a threat to the community, and she's never shown any remorse what she did. No remorse at all.
It's a divorce and murder case that strikes a chord with the public even to this day.
the reason this case resonates, and especially resonates with women, is it gives voice to the fact that there's worth to what they do. There's worth being a wife. There's worth in being a mother. There's a worth to trust. And I think that there's a lot of people that just feel that they disappear.
In the end, the Betty and Dan Broderick saga is a story of unmet expectations that end in betrayal and murder.
The Betty Broderick case will forever be debated, even as she spends what could be the rest of her life behind bars.
In January 2017, Betty Broderick was once again denied parole.
That concludes this episode of Murder Made Me Famous. Don't forget to go to Reels.com, that's R-E-E-L-Z.com, for clips, extras, and more. And don't forget to subscribe on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, and Apple Podcasts.
Shut it down!
Hi, I'm John Taffer. You probably know me because I've rescued thousands of bars, hundreds of them on TV.
That's your future broken!
I'm also a best-selling author, and I've owned and operated a bunch of other businesses. But now, I'm here on Podcast One with my new show, No Excuses. I only yell at assholes. Every Tuesday, I'm going to give it to you straight. I'm giving you all things bar rescue, insider peeks of what's going on the set, current events and topics you care about, with in-your-face analysis, and you know how straight I can be. And I'm going to have unforgettable guest interviews with the world's most interesting people, and I'm going to ask them the questions that nobody else has ever asked them. And yes, sometimes I can be a bit of an ass, but I'm going to shut it down every Tuesday and make no excuses. It's going to be the number one show here on Podcast One. Listen to it every Tuesday on PodcastOne.com, on the Podcast One app, and on Apple Podcasts. And remember, rate and review it, or I'm going to shut you down.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.